pages I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else. And as we go,
you're listening to episode 681 of Unwelcome Guests, Leviathan Remixed. I'm Robin Upton, and this week, our first audio collage in 2 and a bit years, a big thanks to Chaz K of Virtual Renderings, who provided a lot of the material, as well as the inspiration.
I sometimes feel like an alien creature for which there is no earthly explanation. Sure, I have human form, walking erect with opposing digits, but my mind is upside down. I feel like a run-on sentence in a punctuation-crazy world, and I see the world around me like a mad collective dream. An endless stream of people move like ants on the freeway, cell phones, PCs, and digital displays. In money we trust, we'll find happiness, the prevailing attitude. Like a genetically modified irradiated Big Mac is somehow symbolic of food. Morality is legislated, prisons overpopulated, religion is incorporated, the profit motive has permeated all activity. We pay our government to let us park on the street. And war is the biggest money maker of all. We all know missile envy only comes from being small. Politicians and prostitutes are comfortable together. I wonder if they talk about the strange change in the weather. This government was founded by, of, and for the people, but everybody feels it like a giant open sore. They don't represent us anymore. And blaming the president for the country's woes is like yelling at a puppet for the way it sings. Who's the man behind the curtain pulling the strings? A billion people sitting watching their TV in the room that they call living. But as for me, I see living as loving. And since there is no loving room, I sit on the grass under a tree, dreaming of the way things used to be, pre-industrial revolution. Which of course was before the rivers and oceans and skies were polluted, before Parkinson's and mad cows and all the convoluted cacophony of bad ideas like skyscrapers and tree paper and earth rapers like Monsanto and DuPont had their way, as they continue to today. This was pre-us. Back when the buffalo roamed and the Indian's home was the forest and God was nature and heaven was here and now. Can you imagine clean water, food, and air, living in community with animals and people who care? Do you dare to feel responsible for every dollar you lay down? Are you going to make the rich man richer or are you going to stand your ground? You say you want a revolution, a communal evolution, to be a part of the solution. Maybe I'll be seeing you around.
Friedrich Nietzsche in Beyond Good and Evil wrote that only a few people have the fortitude to look into what he calls the molten pit of human reality. A handful of artists and philosophers, for Nietzsche, are consumed by an insatiable curiosity, a quest for truth, a desire for meaning, and this sends them down into the bowels of the pit. They get as close as they can before the flames and heat drive them back. This understanding, Nietzsche wrote, comes at a high cost. Those singed by the fire become burnt children, eternal orphans in empires of illusion. Dying civilizations make war on independent intellectual inquiry, art and culture, on the burnt children. The masters of the corporate state do not want us to peer into the pit, or heed the cries of those who have seen what awaits us. The corporate state rather feeds the thirst for illusion, happiness, and hope. It peddles the fantasy of endless material progress. It insists, and this is the argument of globalization, that our voyage is unalterable, decreed by natural law. It is part of the march of human progress, and those who challenge this myth are heretics.
In a weapons-producing nation under Jesus, in the fabled crucible of the free world, camera crews search for clues amid the detritus. And entertainment shapes the land the way the hammer shapes the hand. Checkout counter at the Church of Fame. The lucky winners cheer Casino Nation. All those not on TV only have themselves to blame. Don't quite seem to understand.
Human species, led by white Europeans and Euro-Americans, has been on a 500-year-long planet-wide rampage of conquering, plundering, looting, exploiting, and polluting the Earth, as well as killing the indigenous communities that stood in the way.
White folks discovered Africa. They claimed it fair and square. Cecil Rhodes couldn't have been robbing nobody because, hell, there wasn't nobody there. And white folks brought all the civilization because there wasn't none around. How could the folks be civilized when wasn't nobody writing nothing down?
But the game is up. The technological and scientific forces that created a life of unparalleled luxury as well as unrivaled military and economic power for a small global elite are the forces that now doom us. The capitalist quest for ceaseless economic expansion has become a curse, a death sentence. But even as our economic and environmental systems unravel, after the hottest year in the contiguous 48 states since record-keeping began 107 years ago, we lack the vision and the courage to shut down the engines of global capitalism.
And everywhere the good prepare for perpetual war. And let their weapons shape the plan. Shakes
Our family farms have been destroyed by agribusinesses. Monsanto and its Faustian counterparts on Wall Street rule. They are steadily poisoning our lives and rendering us powerless. The corporate leviathan, which is global, is freed from the constraints of a single nation state or government. Corporations are beyond regulation or control. Politicians are too anemic, or more often too corrupt, to stand in the way of the accelerating corporate destruction. This makes our struggle different from the revolutionary struggles in industrial societies in the past.
Well, what I see very strongly is that we mustn't be caught by surprise by our own advancing technology. This has happened again and again in history, which technology has advanced, and this changes social conditions, and suddenly people have found themselves in a situation which they didn't foresee and doing all sorts of things they didn't really want to do.
The police aren't who you think they are. The sheriff is not who you think he is. Banks do not do what you think they do. Governments don't operate anywhere near the way you think they do. And that's why when you look at what's going on in the world today, none of it makes any sense. It's all crazy. It makes no sense at all. It seems very destructive. But actually, in point of fact, you don't know how the system works. It's working perfectly fine. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And the people, the masses, are entertained with television and alcohol and drugs, and the wealthy continue to get wealthy, and so it's working perfectly fine. Once you understand how the world really works, and nothing works the way you think it does. When you begin to break down how government works, banks work, you begin to see a whole world that you've never known. The word I use is occult. Occult simply means hidden. And this is exactly what is going on in the world today. Our governments, banks, institutions of education, etc., are operating on a totally occult or hidden basis. And so what we are told and given to understand is not the truth. I have a reasonable respect for law and order. I'm not so stupid as not to understand the need for red lights and the things which are required in law for people to live together. But I have no respect for religion, government, banking, and especially educational institutions, because I know who finances these organizations. I have found that so many people willingly bend themselves to what their masters want from them. What your masters want is for you to be in compliance, for you to think what they have told you to think. The news is nothing more than what somebody and higher up wants you to believe. So that's why I have no respect for the news. I don't watch television. I'm not interested in Hollywood or movies as such. I believe government boils down to the war between the Crips and the Bloods. That's all it is. It's just one gang is superior to another gang. Unless, of course, that other gang gets a little more money and gets a little bit more vicious. Now they take over town. And so it's a war between gangs, because after all, when it's all boiled down, it boils down to one thing. We're all human. And like Martin Luther King said, individuals can be bad and corrupt. But when you get a whole bunch of individuals bad and corrupt, and they're wearing uniforms and wearing badges, now you've got a gang. And the police department even have said that. You know, they tell me things like that. Yeah, we're the biggest gang in town. We're legal. We can do whatever we want. So I understood a long time ago that government is simply gang warfare. Who's going to run this town? What family in the mob is going to run this area of the town? So that's why I have no respect for government, banking, or anything else to me. Religions have been given to us by the same people who gave us our government, our banks, our educational institutions, our whole entire bloody system in Western civilization is based on religion, politics, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's just business. It's just money. It's just the control of people.
You are an old man who thinks in terms of nations and peoples. There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no races. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immense, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. Petrodollars, electrodollars, multidollars, Reichmarks, rims, rubles, pounds, and shekels. It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet. That is the natural order of things to be. That is the atomic and subatomic and galactic structure of things today.
The state, in its internal projections, has a vision of the future that is as dystopian as mine. But the state, to protect itself, uses its mechanisms of propaganda to assure us that we can continue to build a society based on limitless growth, profligate consumption, and a dependence on fossil fuel. The mania for hope is fed at the expense of truth. The corporate state, meanwhile, is preparing secretly for the world it knows is actually coming. It is cementing into place a pervasive police state, one that includes the complete evisceration of our most basic civil liberties and the militarization of the internal security apparatus, as well as the wholesale surveillance of the citizenry. Those with the moral courage to expose this security and surveillance apparatus, Chelsea Manning, Julian Assange, Edward Snowden, Jeremy Hammond, are criminalized and persecuted.
If in times like this, you can talk about individual freedom, you're probably a terrorist.
The way you felt about Game of Thrones, when that whole family was slaughtered, oh no. That's how I feel most days. It's how anyone feels when they turn away from the screen with such regularity and long enough to witness the most intricate, mass-scale human drama in the history of the Earth. We stand at the end of an epoch, at the end of a civilization, at the end of an empire, at the start of something else. Nobody knows what will happen in the next season, but people have got some inklings. We're moving into a new geological era, sixth mass extinction spasm. Every civilization, man, beast, plant, rock, mineral, oil, is under silent siege. Everywhere you look, billions and billions of stories, and we're missing all of them, while we stare at something that is not happening. Is essentially a lie. It's all in your minds. What is happening is the planet is awash with slaves, and all of them are heroes just waiting to happen. Only we'd give it some of our attention. People tell me that I carry the weight of the world on my shoulders. Indeed, that's why I beg a hand carrying it. Spread the load around. But it's not. People aren't watching. They're staring into bright lights like rabbits before impact, and it freaks me out. Because I'm not watching Game of Thrones. I'm watching history write itself, and it's the most thrilling, exhilarating, troubling, terrifying, evocative meta-story that's ever been written. And it's happening right here, right now, in real time. The stories, the characters, the lives. You think what happens on TV is bad. You should see what my granddad had to do with knives. You should see how your iPhone comes together. Now there's some stories. We're wearing stories, slave stories, every day new episodes.
Modern servitude is voluntary, consented to by the mass of slaves who trudge along the face of the earth. They themselves buy the commodities that enslave them every day more. Slaves procure alienating jobs that are bestowed upon the tame. They themselves choose the masters whom they will obey. For this absurd tragedy to play out, it has been necessary to breed in them the ignorance of their own exploitation and alienation. Behold, the bizarre modernity of our time, as with the slaves of antiquity, serfs of the Middle Ages, or the working class of the first industrial revolutions, today we bear witness to an emerging class of the totally enslaved. The difference being, they don't know it, or better yet, choose to ignore it. They fail to recognize the one weapon available to the enslaved, rebellion. Slaves accept without question the pitiful life that was manufactured on their behalf. Apathy and resignation are the sources of their misfortune. Behold the nightmare of the modern-day slave, whose sole aspiration is to be swept away by the macabre dance of the machine of alienation.
If you did see it, you'd feel it. Every day. You might feel like I do. We're not so different. We're just tuned into different stations. I feel a bit alone when everyone's tuned into Game of Thrones. I feel like everyone's missing out not only on watching the greatest drama on earth unfold, but to participate in it. To script it ourselves. While we watch the screen, the directors prime the scene, and it's a very interesting scene. And we think the plot is so complex, not really up to us to figure out. But actually, it's just all the background noise getting in the way of some very simple things. Slaves, profits, cunning as foxes in a henhouse. Sweet deal. There's a ruse going on. It's part of what makes the plot so exciting, fascinating, creepy. And the ruse is not so elaborate. It's simple. Flash a light in their faces while you round them up for labor. Keep them distracted while you steal the land out from underneath them. Justify the acquisition in a foreign dialect. Take by stealth and not by siege. Capture the people intact and have them do your work. Sabotage those who resist. Kill them if you have to. It's in the killing where things get really interesting. A whole lot of killing going on. Lots of stories. The feelings. If I'm the only one I know tuning into this show, is it really happening? I tell you where it's up to and you look at me as if I'm crazy, like, where do I get all this stuff from? These ideas, these opinions, these projections. What really freaks me out, and a lot of you do this, is when you look me in the eye and say, it's not happening. The conspiracies, the theft, the propaganda wars, the homicides, the homicides, the homicides, the homicides, the lies, a colossal interspecies genocide. A Holocaust. Not happening.
The dominant culture of civilization is killing the planet. And it's long past time that those of us who care about life on Earth began to take the actions necessary to stop this culture from destroying every living being. 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. There's 10 times as much plastic as phytoplankton in the oceans. 97% of native forests are destroyed. 98% of native grasslands. Amphibian populations are collapsing, migratory songbird populations are collapsing, mollusk populations are collapsing, fish populations are collapsing, and so on. 200 species are driven extinct each and every day. If we don't know the statistics and trends, we should. And by the way, have you noticed that you don't have to clean your windshield nearly as often as you used to? Even insect populations are collapsing. This culture destroys land bases. That's what it does. When you think of Iraq, is the first thing that comes to mind cedar forests so thick that sunlight never touches the ground. One of the first written myths of this culture is about Gilgamesh deforesting the hills and valleys of Iraq to build a great city. The Arabian Peninsula used to be oak savanna. The Near East was heavily forested. We've all heard of the cedars of Lebanon. Greece was heavily forested. North Africa was heavily forested. I'll say it again. This culture destroys land bases. and it won't stop doing so because we ask nicely.
Take another book prophesying the future, which was a very remarkable book, George Orwell's 1984. Mm-hmm. Well, this book was written at the height of the Stalinist regime and just after the Hitler regime. And there he foresaw a dictatorship using entirely the methods of terror, the methods of physical violence. Now, I think what is going to happen in the future is the dictators will find, as the old saying goes, that you can do everything with bayonets except sit on them. That if you want to preserve your power indefinitely, you have to get the consent of the ruled. And this they will do partly by drugs, as I foresaw in Brave New World, partly by these new techniques of propaganda.
One nation under God has turned into one nation under the influence of one drug. Television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation.
They will do it by bypassing the sort of rational side of man and appealing to his subconscious and his deeper emotions and his physiology even, and so making him actually love his slavery. I mean, I think this is the danger, that actually people may be in some ways happy under the new regime. But they will be happy in a situation where they oughtn't to be happy.
But let me ask you this. You're talking about a world that could take place within the confines of a totalitarian state. Hmm. Let's become more immediate, more urgent about it. We believe, anyway, that we live in a democracy here in the United States. Do you believe that this brave new world that you talk about could, let's say, in the next quarter century, the next century, could come here to our shores?
I think it could. I mean, that's why I feel it's so extremely important here and now to start thinking about these problems, not to let ourselves be taken by surprise by the new advances in technology.
I'll say it again. This culture destroys land bases, and it won't stop doing so because we ask nicely. We don't live in a democracy. And before you gasp at this blasphemy, ask yourself, do governments better serve corporations or living beings? Do judicial systems hold CEOs accountable for their destructive, often murderous acts?
1, 2, 1, 4, 5, 1. Look, the planet is dying, so you can keep the change. My job options are still dying. My mother weeps the same. We tear muscles to own rubble, borrow money.
Tinfoil hat, conspirator, feminazi, Luddite, greenie, hippie, feral, extremist, terrorist. Sheesh, man, I'm just watching the show. Game of Thrones is not actually happening. Puppies. Puppies will make them sleepy. Stare into the lights, my pretties.
This is too nightmarish to contemplate. We're talking about the fate of a whole planet. Why are people so polite? Why are they so patient? Why are they so forgiving of gangsterism and betrayal? It's very difficult to understand. I believe it's because the dominator culture is increasingly more and more sophisticated in its perfection of subliminal mechanisms of control. And I don't mean anything grandiose and paranoid. I just mean that through press releases and sound bites and the enforced idiocy of television, the drama of a dying world has been turned into a soap opera for most people. And they don't understand that it's their story and that they will eat it in the final act. If somewhere between here and the final act, they don't stand up on their hind legs and howl.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Total power in one person. Not the American way.
Today we're focusing on one of the foundational texts of the Green Anarchist Critique of Civilization, Against History, Against Leviathan, by the prolific Czech-born anarchist writer Freddie Perlman.
These damn films are tired all the damn time! You should be ashamed of yourself! I'm sick of it!
In his masterpiece, Against History, Against Leviathan, Freddie Perlman overhauls our understanding of history with a scathing critique of civilization. According to Perlman, the advent of civilization signaled the dissolution of pre-existing ecstatic human communities and the emergence of a monstrous, repressive Leviathan, an enormous, all-devouring beast that symbolizes the logic of a totalitarian system. Perlman's primary question, why do people remain complicit in the theft of their living energies? Is answered in vivid concrete images. The Leviathan itself is characterized as a carcass brought to artificial life by the motions of the human beings trapped inside.
Every year, we give power to one person. It was not made that way in the Constitution. He was around when it was written. We passed rules that stop each one of us. Enough! Feel like somebody trying to be released from Egypt. Let my people go! My God, they sent me here to argue for them! But I'm trapped. I'm trapped by rules that have been forced down our throats. Folks, we live in a democracy, but not here. So you go back and you tell your people, I'd like to do that, but the speaker has so much power, so much control, and each one of us do it in their districts, and have to go back and say that. And you can say on your side of the aisle, oh, no, no, that's not the case. Yes, you do. All of us know you got to deal with it. When's it going to stop? When's it going to stop?
For Perlman, this is not some historical puzzle, but our current dilemma. The enslavement of humans has become like a heavy armor or an ugly mask, more and more difficult to remove, emptying its victim of life, of ecstasy. The empty space is filled with springs and wheels, with dead things, with Leviathan's substance. Perlman posits that the supposed harsh material conditions before civilization weren't as harsh as we've always been told, describing pre-civilized life as people who were much but had little, a life focused not on possession of things, but rather possession of being. This rediscovery of the primitive signals not only a return to nature, but a new direction for freedom. He wrote, "The state of nature is a community of freedoms, a garden of earthly delights filled with dances, games, and feasts. This is the affirmation of paradise on earth, both in the remote, suppressed past and as a dormant yet imminent promise." Today, such provocative declarations elicit the same scorn that was shown towards witches, pagan dancers, and native communities as they were put to the torch. Rationalism, the brutalized logic of slaves whose insides are filled with springs and wheels, cannot accommodate the possibility of paradise. They apply the word wild to the free, Perlman wrote, but it is another public secret that the domesticated occasionally become wild, but are never free so long as they remain in their pens. Our capacity to become wild, to transgress the limitations of our pens, allows for hope. I take it for granted that resistance is the natural response to dehumanization, he observed, and therefore does not have to be explained or justified. And the potential is immediate, a presence within all of us, since people never become altogether empty shells. A glimmer of life remains. Many who pick up Against History have to give it a few tries. It's thick with historical references, but wading through the necessary citations is well worth it. If you can put aside the occasionally patronizing idealization of ancient and indigenous cultures, Against History sets out the fundamental critique of civilization underlying primitivist and situationist strains of thought among anarchists ever since. Against History, Against Leviathan was first printed by Black and Red Press in 1983 and is available through their website, blackandred.org, or through LBC at littleblackcart.com.
We can entrap children into becoming organic machinery simply by ignoring the universal human awareness that there is something dreadfully important beyond the rational. We can cause children to mistrust themselves so severely they come to depend on cost-benefit analyses for everything. We can teach them to scorn faith so comprehensively, that's the way they do it at Yale Divinity School, that buying things and that buying things and feeling good becomes the point of their lives. The Soviet Empire did this brilliantly for a little over 70 years. Its surveillance of individual lives was total. It maintained dossiers on each human unit, logged every deviation, and assigned a mathematical value so that citizens could be ranked against each other. Does that sound familiar? It schooled every child in a fashion prescribed by the best psychological experts. It strictly controlled the rewards of work to ensure compliance, and it developed a punishment system unheard of in its comprehensiveness. If you want to ever explore that, read Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. If human science could guarantee a stable orthodoxy directed out of the centralized leadership of a political state, then Soviet practice reached the millennium where lives can be regarded as Galileo regarded planetary bodies. I sat no more than 10 feet directly in front of Jean Kirkpatrick about 8 years ago in a small room in the old Senate office building, and she informed this little group of political chairmen that it would be at least 100 years before we saw cracks in the Soviet Union because they had mastered every detail of deviance and they could chart these things and predict them far in advance. Oh, Jean. She said, the Kremlin owns all the tanks, all the jobs, all the schools, and all the food. But just the other day, I read in the New York Times that 8,000 criminal gangs, many of them white-collar, operate freely today in what used to be the Soviet Union. An explosion of irrationality is upon them in spite of all their precautions. Finally, the suffocation of leading well-schooled lives got to be more than the Soviets could bear. Nobody could be trusted, not even the army. Everybody cheated, lied, stole, sabotaged orders, felt contempt for everyone else because they felt contempt for themselves. A bedrock principle of human nature had just been violated too long, and so the whole apparatus fell apart. It lasted one lifetime. Our softer form of spiritual suffocation has already been in place for two lifetimes.
I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year, with the blood and the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men who send the guns to the wars that I fought in places where their business interests run. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore and they pick up a gun. Oh.
As the collapse becomes increasingly palpable, if human history is any guide, we, like past societies in distress, will see many retreat into what anthropologists call crisis cults. The powerlessness felt in the face of ecological and economic chaos will unleash further collective delusions, a belief, for example, that God or gods will come back to Earth and save us.
As with all oppressed human beings throughout history, the modern slave needs mysticism and God to anesthetize the evil that torments him and the suffering that overwhelms him. But this new God to whom he gave his soul is naught but nothingness, a piece of paper, a number, that, through his common consent, acquires artificial value. It is in the name of this God that people work, study, fight, and sell themselves. It is for this God that man forsakes his values and is prepared to do whatever. He believes that the more money he possesses, the more free he will be from all constraints, as though ownership and freedom went hand in hand. But freedom is the asceticism that comes from self-control, from the desire and will to act, to be, not to have. One must resolve to never serve or obey under any condition. Today's slave is convinced that there is no alternative to the existing world order. He has resigned himself to this life because he believes there is no other. Herein lies the force of the present domination. Maintain the illusion that this system, which has colonized the entire world, is the end of history. It has convinced the subjugated class that this ideology is mankind's true state of nature, and as such, his logical condition. To dream a different world has become a crime condemned in unison by the media and all the entities of power. When in reality, the criminal is he who contributes, consciously or not, to the dementia of the dominant social structure. There is no greater madness than that of the present system.
Our bankers, corporate boards, politicians, television personalities, and generals hold up seductive images of unrivaled wealth and power. Like Ahab and his crew, these images spur us towards self-annihilation. All my means are sane, Ahab says, my motive and my object mad. Perhaps the most prescient portrait of the American character and our ultimate fate as a species is found in Herman Melville's Moby Dick. Melville, in his novel, makes our murderous obsessions, blinding hubris, violent impulses, moral cowardice, and lust for self-destruction visible in his chronicle of a doomed whaling voyage. He is our foremost oracle, what William Shakespeare was to Elizabethan England, or Fyodor Dostoevsky was to Tsarist Russia. In Moby Dick, our country is given shape in the form of the ship, the Pequod, named after the Pequot Indian tribe exterminated in 1638 by the Puritans and their Native American allies. The ship's 30-man crew, there were 30 states in the Union when Melville wrote the novel, is a mixture of races and creeds. The object of the hunt is a massive white whale, Moby Dick, which in a previous encounter maimed the ship's captain, Ahab, by dismembering one of his legs. The maniacal quest, much like that of a civilization, dependent on fossil fuel and the profits of global speculators, assures the Pequod's destruction.
Remember that 200 years ago, before petroleum, 75% of the human population was in some form of serfdom or slavery. That's the nature of civilizations. And after petroleum has been exhausted, those in power will try to return to the same arrangement.
And those on the ship, on some level, know they are doomed. Just as many of us know that our civilization and our ecosystem cannot stand the continued assault by corporate capitalism. But when a man suspects any wrong, it sometimes happens that if he be already involved in the matter, he insensibly strives to cover up his suspicions from himself, Ishmael says in Moby Dick. And much this way it was with me. I said nothing and tried to think nothing. Melville, who had been a sailor on clipper ships and whalers, was aware that the wealth of industrialized societies was violently seized from the wretched of the earth. All the authority figures on the ship are white men, Ahab, Starbuck, Flask, and Stubb. The hard, dirty work, from harpooning to gutting the carcasses of whales, is the task of the poor, mostly men of color. Melville saw how European plundering of indigenous cultures from the 16th to the 19th century, coupled with the use of African slaves as a workforce to replace the natives, enriched Europe and the United States. The Spanish conquest of the Americas set in motion 5 centuries of reckless economic and environmental plunder.
There's a shadow on the faces of the men who fanned the flames of the wars that I fought in places we can't even say the names. They sell us the president the same way they sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion. The same time they sell us our wars. I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children at the cannons. There is blood on the wire. Fire, children at the cannons. There are.
Rebellion is a moral imperative. It is to be carried out regardless of the possibilities of success. It is not for the practical or the timid. It is an act that is performed in the end because of. In times of despair and suffering, it affirms life.
Satellites have captured your every move. You cannot escape. Your microchips are ready. Now we will sweep your homes for contraband, narcotics, illegal poetry, books or signs of free expression and music.
Welcome to the Big Brother Society. Planting microchips inside your wrist is what they want with no variety. Microcosms of a branded metropolis. Apply digital technology to overtake the populace. Cameras on every corner, in every single store. With borders unnecessary, we're tracked to the core. Satellites surveilling your home and tapping your phone and reading your mail. Trying to fill you out like exit signs in Braille. But they rely on your stupidity to never question validity. Or the law specifically, give them an inch, so take a mile. And meanwhile, it's too late, cause now they got the right to legally confiscate and lock you up as a terrorist for voicing your dissent against the empire and what it represents. And all in the name of safety of the rich, dumb, and blind. America, the time to act is nearly left behind.
We will belong to the futuristic prison. Leave your sanity at the door. There's no way out. Life as you know it is over.
You cannot be a citizen when your country no longer exists.
Brought
the end of all your literature and covert despair to convert and impair. Control your brain waves in these days like no one cares. With words that never end, they seek the severment from cultures like hungry vultures. Stage toppling of sculptures like Saddam Hussein's in the town square of Iraq that create the false situations and then they beam it back via the media. The Fifth Estate, like questionable tapes from Osama bin Laden that have now been proved fake. We all truly know they originate to propagate your fear. So keep an open ear, cause your obligation is near to wake up and die trying to live a life that's worth living. Although it seems we passed that point like Thanksgiving and celebrations of murder. If they seek to draft me to fight, I'll desert the herd at midnight like an activist might.
When you have a government that operates without limits, which proclaims the right to arrest, torture, and kill anyone, anywhere, with no warrants, no trial, no due process, when you have a government that militarizes the police and grants the armed forces the power to operate with impunity, within your own borders and beyond, a government that views you, the people, as the enemy, and treats you as such, when you have a government that lies to take you into wars of aggression, toppling country after country, killing countless innocent civilians, sending your sons and daughters, your fathers and brothers home in flag-draped coffins, were disfigured and broken in mind and body, their lives destroyed in wars that serve only to line the pockets of an unelected cartel of bankers and corporations. When you have all of this right in front of you, so blatant, so clear, with president after president towing the line of the same agenda, you shouldn't have to be convinced that both parties in this political puppet show are owned and operated by the same interest. And you shouldn't have to be convinced that these overrated corporate popularity contests, as some call elections, are distractions that achieve nothing. And if you see where this is headed, you shouldn't have to be convinced that the system that you're living under must be brought to a halt.
Listen to the sound that you hear like an echo in your head. There's a strange vibration. Sound of a drum calling players to the game of the new world order. Don't be caught unaware when the heads start rolling. No, it couldn't happen here. I know it wouldn't happen here. I will not submit to authority of man.
Those will be taken aback when you start using the word revolution. Revolution, the act of revolting and overturning the current power structure, is an extreme measure, one that should be handled with extreme caution, and in most cases, they should be avoided. Revolutions are dangerous in every sense of the word, and it is difficult, if not impossible, to predict their outcome. But there are times when allowing those in control to stay in control is even more dangerous. Right now, the question you need to ask yourself is this: are we at that point yet? Can the current system be reformed?
Authority of man, I'm alive, I'm awake. This is more than I can take. If you had an open door, would you kill a little more?
ghost of Vietnam through a veil of napalm. Don't forget your mistakes and where you came from.
Revolutions begin with a no, and they end with a yes. Revolutions begin when you say no to those who claim to have power over you. And revolutions end when you accept a new status quo, a new normal, whether that new normal is an improvement or not. The causes of revolution are numerous in form, but there is one common root, and that's discontent. Discontent is the emotion that builds and builds under the surface. It is a storm which brews in the mind of the people, just waiting to be unleashed. The trouble is that it's much easier to unleash that storm than it is to get people in agreement as to what should come next. It's not easy to get people to see eye to eye regarding what needs to happen after the current system falls. So this is usually put off, or avoided altogether. And that's a serious mistake. Without clear objectives, chaos usually sets in soon after the old regime falls. And then, in the power vacuum that's created, a tyrant rises to bring order. As a result, the systems that follow revolutions are often just as totalitarian or more totalitarian than those that they replace. It should therefore be abundantly obvious that discontent is not a sufficient driving force for a revolution. That is, if your goal is to actually leave a better world for your children and grandchildren. In order for an upheaval to have positive results, it must be driven by a clear and realistic vision. A vision that accounts for the world and humans the way that they actually are right now. Not the way that we wish they would be, or that we hope that they might be. And it must differentiate between that which can and cannot be changed in the short term. There is nothing more dangerous than armed men with utopian dreams. So, let's be realistic, shall we? We the people are divided. We have divided ourselves into classes and subclasses, liberals and conservatives, libertarians, anarchists, socialists, anarcho-socialists, minarchists, state-based free market capitalists, anarcho-capitalists, resource-based economy advocates, and more. There is absolutely no chance that any one of you is going to convince all the others that your way is the right way. Unless, of course, one of you rises to political power in the fray and enforces your beliefs by the barrel of a gun. This is the way it usually happens throughout history, and this is what we must avoid repeating. A movement is only successful if it starts with an idea that is strong enough to take root in the mind of the population and inspires and motivates people to spread it. It is possible for a diverse and divided people to form a coalition in times of great need and unify around an idea.
The role of the artist, then, precisely, is to illuminate that darkness. Blaze roads through the vast forest, James Baldwin wrote, so that we will not, in all our doing, lose sight of its purpose, which is, after all, to make the world a more humane dwelling place. Ultimately, the artist and the revolutionary function as they function and pay whatever dues they must pay behind it, because they are both possessed by a vision, that they do not so much follow this vision as find themselves driven by it.
Pay particular attention to your luggage and personal belongings. Unattended luggage will, and personal belongings may be treated as a danger to the facility. Do not be persuaded by strangers or individuals you do not know well to take articles aboard your flights.